From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Ollie Barrett there. Thanks very much, Ollie Barrett. What a balmy day today in the Republic of Mancunia. Spring has sprung, 19 degrees at lunchtime in the south of the city. Lovely stuff. More of the same tomorrow, apparently. It's got to be all of that global warming, eh?
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
Yeah, global warming. Is it? Not sure.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Welcome, one and all. Michael Rivero will drop in a little bit later on from Oahu in Hawaii. He won't be parachuting in, Mike. He'll be coming in via the old dog and bone. Lots to catch up with. Been a couple of months since Mike was on the programme. Ordinarily, he's on every month. But of course, I was off sick for a few weeks with pneumonia. So Michael will be on a bit later on. Before that, extended news roundup from me with one or two very interesting things to discuss. As usual, I look forward to getting your approval or your most stern disapproval. The latter being all the more enjoyable, I think. So looking forward to your comments on Twitter. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. It is Wednesday, 20th of March, and spring is here. I know, I said it. Beautiful day today. Wonderful. I was out jogging this morning, very warm, in the very early hours of the morning, just after 6:30, I was out and about jogging, and it was warm then. It became exceedingly warm as the day wore on. It's beautiful out there today, and I hope it continues for the next few days. What are we going to talk about then? What are we going to kick off with? Oh yeah, by the way, little bit of a public service announcement. If you're homeless in the UK at the moment and your circumstances are tough, believe me when I say you've got my genuine sympathy and the sympathy of most of my listeners. But try and get yourself to Mozambique or Zimbabwe. I know, if you can't afford to put a roof over your head, how can you afford a flight? But you might get a cheap flight. Get over to Mozambique and Zimbabwe, because our government is sending millions of pounds there because of the hurricane. Millions! I don't know why. Those countries can surely deal with a very bad hurricane event, right? And some fatalities, which are very, very sad, genuinely, right? £6 million, apparently, from the UK. If you're homeless, you've got a better chance of being looked after by your government if you can get yourself to a disaster zone. These are strange times. Sarcasm is the lowest form of wit, Richie. It might be. It might be, but it struck me today. You know, anyway. There's a rugby union team in New Zealand called the Canterbury Crusaders. I tweeted something about this after last evening's programme. The Canterbury Crusaders. And they've taken virtue signalling to all new heights. They've raised the bar to where you cannot even see it. In solidarity with those murdered in the mosques in Christchurch last Friday, Canterbury Crusaders are saying that they might drop the name Crusaders from their official name to distance themselves from violence against Muslims.
What kind of fuckery is this?
Ah, it's, well, fuckery is what it is. But it's a lovely gesture. Brings a tear to the eyes. Now, the Saudi Arabian football team, the Jeddah Jihadis, said they would do the same, not to be outdone. They would do the same to distance themselves from violence against the West. The Jeddah Jihadis, currently lying third in the Saudi Arabian Super League. They've never had to postpone a football game over losing a football. They just pick some unfortunate fecker out of the crowd, grab a long sword, whoosh, and they carry on kicking the ball. Hey, hey. No career in comedy for me, no doubt. The Jeddah Jihadis. At least I thought it was funny. Lest somebody believe it, there isn't a football team called the Jeddah Jihadis. Just in case. You have to be careful about these things. Now, British naturism and the protection of children. You may have heard me chatting last night with a citizen journalist and vlogger, Cassie Crowhurst, about naturism and about an event which will take place at Waterworld in Stoke-on-Trent next month, which will be open to the public, where naturists and their children will be swimming. I contacted British Naturism today. I left messages for a man called Andrew Welch. I also emailed them. I haven't had a reply as of yet, but I promise I'll keep on it. And I will get some comment from an official naturist society, or even from naturists themselves. I want to broaden the issue out and talk about naturism anyway on the programme. Alrighty? Alrighty. The Jeddah Jihadis, huh? Right, Prime Minister Theresa May has written to the European Union to ask for a 3 months delay to Brexit. You heard Ollie Barrett on the news. The UK is leaving the EU next Friday on the 29th of March. I can't even say it without laughing, because we're not. But May wants it to be postponed until June 30th. She's written a letter to European Council President Donald Tusk saying she needs more time to get this withdrawal agreement passed by MPs. She's apparently going to take it to Parliament for a third time. Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn accused her of leading the UK into crisis, chaos and division. He's not very good at alliteration, is he? Crisis, chaos and division. What about crisis, chaos and catastrophe, Jeremy? You bearded fecker. We are still legally due to leave the European Union in 9 days' time, Jeremy Corbyn told Theresa May. Let's first of all hear from the Prime Minister, Theresa May.
On Thursday, the House voted in favour of a short extension if the House had supported a meaningful vote before this week's European Council. The motion also made it clear that a longer extension would oblige the United Kingdom to hold elections to the European Parliament. Mr. Speaker, I do not believe such elections would be in anyone's interests. The idea that 3 years after voting to leave the EU, the people of this country should be asked to elect a new set of MEPs is, I believe, unacceptable. It will be a failure to deliver on the referendum decision that this House said it would honour.
Hang on now, you daft mayor. A delay to Brexit is just as much of a betrayal as having European Parliament elections here. Any delay? You've had 2.5 years, you bint. What have you been doing? Well, I'll tell you in a minute what she's been doing. I've put together something for you. What else did she say? The daft, cloth-eared bint.
The long way to go, and what the Prime Minister is saying must be heard. The Prime Minister.
I have therefore this morning written to President Tusk, the President of the European Council, informing him that the UK seeks an extension to the Article 50 period until the 30th of June. Copies of the letter are being placed in the libraries of the House.
Lovely. So she wrote to Donald Tusk. We will hear from Tusk in a minute. Before that, what about the Leader of the Opposition, Jeremy Corbyn?
Today, Mr. Speaker, marks 1,000 days since the referendum. And this government has led the country and themselves into crisis, chaos and division.
Yeah, you could have said catastrophe, you moron. There's no worse public speaker in the world today than Jeremy Corbyn.
We are still legally due to leave the European Union in 9 days' time.
And don't forget it, you bearded cat weasel looking moron. In 9 days' time, we should be out.
Months of running down the clock and a concerted campaign of blackmail, bullying and bribery has failed to convince the House.
Brilliant. You see, he learned from his earlier mistake with the C's and he got to blackmailing, bullying and bribery. He's no moron, Jeremy. I shouldn't have called him a moron. He caught on fairly quickly there. Alliteration. It's lovely. It's lovely. So European Council President Donald Tusk then gave a statement. Before we hear that, though, French media is reporting that the French President Emmanuel Macron, Rothschild's man in France, Emmanuel Macron, Le Point, or Le Point, is reporting that President Emmanuel Macron will block Theresa May's request for an extension. Don't forget, in order for the extension to be granted, the EU27 must agree unanimously, all of them. If one says no, well then the extension will be vetoed. So Le Point magazine is saying that Macron has decided to veto the extension. So it's all kicking off. Here is European Council President Donald Tusk. He addressed the media a short time ago, and this is what he said about the extension.
Just now I had a phone call with Prime Minister May about these proposals. In the light of the consultations that I have conducted over the past days, I believe that a short extension will be possible. But it will be conditional on a positive vote on the withdrawal agreement in the House of Commons. The question remains open as to the duration of such an extension. Prime Minister May's proposal of the 30th of June, which has its merit, creates a series of questions of a legal and political nature.
Yeah, checkmate. That's what checkmate is. Pincered. You can have your extension, Theresa, if you get the withdrawal agreement through. But she won't. Then the European Union will want an indefinite delay. Ah, Jesus. You're sick of it now, aren't you? I can feel it through the interweb. I'm at one end of the interweb, you're at the other end, and I can feel it, the frustration. My pal Patricia is in Switzerland going, I haven't a clue what's going on. I don't either, Patricia. The wonderful thing about this job is, when you succeed at it, you can come across like you know what you're talking about. I haven't a Scooby-Doo either, what's going on. You're sick of it, but we're nearly at the end of it now. And I think as it approaches the conclusion, the inevitable conclusion, it's getting a tad more interesting than it was. So where did it all go wrong? George Best, lying on a bed with Miss World and a fistful of money, and the waiter comes in. Ah, George, where did it all go wrong? Where did this go wrong, right? What happened in the last 2.5 years? In the last 2.5 years, politicians have been spewing enough bullshit at Westminster to fertilise the Sahara Desert. 2.5 years. What has been going on in that time? Right, if you listened to the programme last Thursday, you'll know that I talked about the civil service and civil servants employed by government departments. Now, civil servants are not elected politicians, mind. They are not elected at all. Civil servants are supposed to be independent of government, and they are bureaucrats, career bureaucrats, by the way, hired, not elected. So we've had basically 2.5 years of fuckery.
What kind of fuckery are you?
Well, I'll tell you what kind of fuckery, right, I'll tell you. The former Brexit Secretary David Davis was on BBC Radio 5 Live this morning, and he was reflecting on what has gone wrong over the last 2.5 years, what went wrong, when it went wrong, and why it went wrong. Listen to David Davis. This is very revealing. It's like opening night. The British Naturist Society. Very revealing this. David Davis on Radio 5 Live.
You should actually explicitly have the political heads in charge of the negotiation, which was not the case throughout the last 1,000 days, as you put it.
Now, that's very important. Let's hear that again. The start of that. 1,000 days. Who was in charge of the negotiations? Was it the political heads?
You should actually explicitly have the political heads in charge of the negotiation, which was not the case throughout the last 1,000 days, as you...
It wasn't the case. Who was in charge of the negotiations then, Mr. Davis, if you were not, and your department of ministers, MPs, ministers that were, we were told, was the Brexit department, the department for exiting the European Union. If you weren't in charge, who was?
Put it. That's the fundamental problem here. Too much power has been given to Whitehall, not enough to the politicians.
Too much power given to Whitehall, not to the politicians. Whitehall is where all the bureaucrats are. the unelected bureaucrats. We've heard that before, haven't we, about Brussels unelected bureaucrats? It's the same here. Civil servants in the civil service. Career bureaucrats. I could say a lot more about them, but I might get myself into serious trouble. Whitehall. What's going on?
And the effect of that, one of them, is Ollie Robbins has become the sort of figurehead of antagonism in this. It's not just Ollie Robbins, it's all Whitehall. I would be surprised if you found a permanent secretary in Whitehall that frankly voted to leave. You know, you've got basically a almost unanimous view against it in Whitehall.
Right, so we'll come to Ollie Robbins in a minute, because he's been May's European advisor and he has been the chief Brexit negotiator. David Davis said it's not all Ollie Robbins' fault, because if you look at all of these bureaucrats, all of them are pro-European Union. It's not just Ollie Robbins, right? We'll hear more about Ollie Robbins in a minute. This is very important, this, because if you want to explain this to someone who doesn't get it, you need to listen to this now. And you don't have to listen too carefully, because it's very obvious. Right. Politicians were not in charge of negotiating with the European Union. Elected officials, not in charge. Ollie Robbins and a bunch of bureaucrats were. Right.
So you're pushing uphill all the time with these people. And that's been one of the problems with the negotiation, which I did not foresee. That I did not foresee.
So who do you blame for the negotiations then? You say you blame yourself for not...
That's Emma Barnett, by the way. She's a little Jewish princess who works for Radio 5 Live. If you think Kay Burley is dumb... Barnett is wretched. He's just fucking told you who's responsible. This is what you get across mainstream media. Right across the mainstream media. Little princesses and princes, totally unqualified to do the job, not listening to the answer. Because while Davis is telling her that it is unelected bureaucrats hampering the efforts of the elected MPs to get out of the European Union, that little fucker is doing her nails and she's on Instagram. Listen to him.
Blame yourself for not winning the argument, but in terms of the negotiations, who do you blame?
Well, I just told you!
Right. There are lots of people at fault, I'm afraid. I mean, one of them, and your listeners will see this, as I said, is we've had a parliament which has set out to block this from the beginning. Set out to block
but
it.
But it's not parliament that can negotiate. It was the Prime Minister.
Exactly. And my view is that up until about December of 2017, it was going fine. It was, you know, there were gritty bits of it, but there were always going to be gritty bits in the international negotiation of this importance and this complexity.
And then what changed?
What changed was two things. Firstly, we gave away the language on Ireland, right? Because in my view, there's a very practical solution to Northern Ireland, but we gave away emblematic language, the so-called full alignment.
Who gave it away?
Well,
it's time to say.
In that respect, the Prime Minister did concede that, and I had a difference of view with it.
Right, so the Prime Minister gave away the best shot that we had at a decent deal to leave the European Union.
But again, I choose my own language. She, of course, at the end of the day, is responsible for all of this. Absolutely, she is.
Yeah, the worthless BBC presenter, Domkopf, didn't understand a word of what Davis just said there. That basically May had charged bureaucrats at Whitehall, civil servants, with the total responsibility of negotiating the UK's exit from the European Union. And that's immensely problematic, says Davis, because those people are overwhelmingly in favour of staying in the European Union. But today's radio presenter, not just little Princess Emma Barnett, but all of them, Kearnsberg, Robert Peston, Sophie Ridge, they're all worthless. They're not real presenters, they're not listeners, and they have no intention of getting to the truth of the matter. This is very serious, because this is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. This is how they did it. This is how they took the result of 2016 and stole it away from the people who voted to leave. This is how they did it. Remember last week on Thursday, the massive bombshell on Sky News. Ed Rennie was on Sky with Kay Burley, and he's a very respected Conservative Party political consultant. And he dropped a hand grenade live on Sky News about Theresa May's Europe advisor and chief Brexit negotiator, Ollie Robbins, unelected Europhile, the man given responsibility for leaving the European Union. Now, this is the most dramatic revelation on UK television last week. And I'm the only live radio show in the country that has talked about this since it happened. That's disgraceful. Very few people know about it. By the way, Ed Rennie knew last week, as you will hear in this clip, which is dated last Thursday, Ed Rennie knew that they would look for a June 30th extension and that they were contemplating it for months. But it's what he says after that that is very important indeed. Sky News last Thursday lunchtime.
I mean, there were reports from the Cabinet that they were considering it till the end of June a few months ago. So that is highly likely indeed. The interesting question is whether it will be one where we have to have the European parliamentary elections happening in this country, or whether it goes up. I mean, the latest suggestion from the EU is a four-year extension, which would inevitably take us past the next general election.
That's what they want, by the way. When Theresa May's deal collapses, the European Union are going to, proffer a multiple year extension to Article 50. This is how it's happening, you see. What he says next is staggering. Not to me, because I knew it, but most people don't know it.
So that looks like another of their stitch-ups.
Stitch-ups. What stitch-ups, says Kay Burley?
To me.
When you say stitch-up, we're going cap in hand to them, are we not, to say, actually, we did say we wanted to leave 2 years ago, but we can't because we've not got our house in order, so can we extend?
Well, the critical point is, of course, is when the exit poll came in at the general election, suddenly there was no majority of people willing to play out in Parliament the strategy of, if you don't give us a decent deal, we will walk away and go to WTO rules, and obviously trying to agree some temporary measures based on Article 24 or something similar. Now, once that was actually the moment that a WTO Brexit, the walking away with no deal option, was taken away. We can look back and say that with almost certainty now. The problem with that is that you cannot negotiate a good deal. And so Michel Barnier, who said, my mission will be to make any Brexit withdrawal as tough as possible so the British will want to stay in the EU, he considers it his job. And after the general election, Theresa May went to Ollie Robbins, having got rid of Nick Timothy, who unwisely wrote
her manifesto. Well, these names mean nothing to our viewers.
So Ollie Robbins was the chief negotiator for the PM after the general election.
Yeah, so after the general election of 2017, which was a disaster because the Tories ran on a ridiculous manifesto that was designed to fail. When it did fail, and May formed the minority government with the support of the DUPs, she then inexplicably appointed Ollie Robbins, not a member of Parliament, a civil servant, and her European Union advisor. She appointed him as the UK's chief Brexit negotiator. And then this happened.
General election. And he basically worked with Michel Barnier to give us the worst possible deal. And that is what we've got. We've got the worst possible withdrawal, because the one reason it's really worse than being a member of the EU is it's even more difficult to leave the withdrawal agreement and the backstop protocol than it is perhaps even to leave the EU itself.
Ollie Robbins should be in the Tower of London in manacles. It's as simple as that. So should Theresa May, because she appointed him for that very reason, that he would destroy and his department of unelected career bureaucrats in the civil service. They would destroy Brexit and work with the European Union against the British people to get the worst possible deal in the world, which, even if it went through, is actually worse than leaving the European Union. May's withdrawal agreement with the European Union is worse than actually walking away. It's incredible, isn't it? That's what's been happening. Final word on Brexit today, you'll be glad to hear, and then we'll talk about something a bit more human interest-like. Nearly fell out of the studio window today. Sky must have fired a producer because they accidentally allowed a real trade unionist on, a man called Eddie Dempsey, to talk about Brexit and about the delay and so on. And Eddie Dempsey schooled Sky News today on what the European Union is and why the real left, the genuine left, real socialists, by the way, of which there are none in Parliament in the UK. Eddie Dempsey explained why a real socialist would fight against the European Union. Now, he was on with a student who was complaining and said that students and young people have the most to lose from leaving the European Union. It's our futures on the line and young people are not being represented, she said. So trade unionist and genuine socialist Eddie Dempsey jumped right in, and this is gold.
The people that are represented most by this decision are the working class. We voted Leave. We do need a people's vote. What we need is a general election so we can replace the politicians in Parliament who are refusing to represent the interests of the people in this country in a referendum with people that will do that. We've had a vote, and the idea is once we've had a vote, that ought to be respected before we have another vote to the contrary. So
if you're calling for a general election,
vote,
though, Eddie, you're calling for a longer delay, aren't you?
I'm calling for a general election because it's clear we have a Parliament that is going against the will of the people and is not prepared to do anything different. We have never had a popular vote against any EU treaty or institution that's been respected. The Dutch were overturned, the French were overturned, the Irish were overturned, the Greeks were ignored, and now it's our turn. So the idea there's anything democratic about rerunning referendums until we get the answer that the European institutions and the political elite in this country want is democratic. It's an absolute joke. We should have a general election and replace those politicians with people that will respect...
Eddie, I'm just trying to see... You're calling for this, that's all well and good, but how do you see this happening practically in terms of the delivering Brexit, which by law will leave the EU on March the 29th unless an extension is agreed?
Well, my trade union has always opposed the European Union. We campaigned to leave the European Union. When we won the referendum, which we expected we would, we didn't for a second believe that that meant we would leave, because it is like the Hotel California. You never can leave. And what we're going to see over the coming months is more prevarication. So the only two ways I can see us leaving is either through the general incompetence of the political class or if we crash out on WTO rules. My preference would be that we leave the European Union without a deal because it's obvious the European Union has no interest or desire to negotiate a deal with us. And any trade unionist will tell you, you can only negotiate a deal if the other side are prepared to agree a deal with you.
Well, the EU say they've
already... The European Union is not.
Very good stuff by Eddie Dempsey. Now, he went on to say that Labour... I'm paraphrasing now, but that Labour is effectively useless because Jeremy Corbyn, a long-time Eurosceptic, is in fact being held hostage by Blairites in the party, and that Labour is still controlled, at least the parliamentary party, by Blairites. So he has no hope that the Labour Party will do anything different, and he doesn't see the Labour Party as being better or morally superior on this issue to the Conservative Party. And on the issue of students, he basically said, without sounding like a condescending arsehole, he said that basically students don't understand what the European Union is. They have no understanding of it because they are fed a diet of claptrap, of tripe, of nonsense by the mainstream media. They don't understand what the organisation is and where it's heading in terms of full spectrum dominance of the continent militarily, fiscally and politically. They just don't understand. Don't blame them and call them snowflakes. They don't understand. They're getting all their news from BBC and Sky and various other mainstream publications and networks, and that's why they just don't understand it. By the way, Eddie Dempsey will probably be never invited back onto Sky News again in his life. You won't be hearing old Eddie anytime soon. Right, we're going to leave Brexit and we're going to come back and talk about something completely different. This is the Richie Allen Show, live on Fab Radio 2, triggerwarning.tv, TuneIn Radio and richieallen.co.uk. Good to be with you, as always. Music from the Rolling Stones. Back with more chat in a minute. Tweet me, please. Rolling Stones on the Richie Allen Show. Jumping Jack Flash. Saw them at Old Trafford Stadium last summer, the Stones. Amazing when bands like the Stones, as senior as they are in terms of their age, you know, not to be ageist at all. It's amazing when they pick up the guitars and walk into an arena with 50,000 people there. The lines disappear off their faces. It's an amazing thing, isn't it? Music and energy. Great show that was last year, the old Rolling Stones. David Stanford tweets, Richie, it's easy to see what's going on. The British people are being rotated on E Helical Ridge, deeply and dry, he says. Susan tweets, as if the European Union would reject an extension. Wish they would, though. I'm wishing on a star they will. You never know, it might work, says Susan. They might do, Susan. They might do, to force a longer extension. Yes, we will only give you a 30-day, or a three-month, I should say, a three-month extension, so long as you get your deal through Parliament. But if you don't, we won't give you one. And they'll get a longer one then anyway. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter for the tweets, please. Mr. Mortimer tweets, Rich tweets, basically they want us to have a deal because the deal is crap. We are still controlled, but even with no say on legislation. Great deal for the European Union. That's a very succinct description of what May's deal is, which is Brexit in name only. Stephen Guinness, how you doing, Stephen? Richie, I wouldn't bet against Parliament supporting the withdrawal agreement on the proviso that the final say goes to the public. People's Vote March in London this weekend. Convenient timing, says Stephen there. Thank you, Stephen. Dean tweets, Richie, forget what kind of fuckery is this by Amy. The words by Rage Against the Machine spring to mind. Wake up, says Dean. You see, Dean, I don't think you're going to have to wait long for that which you are asking for. I think people are waking up to it because it's in their faces in a way it never was before. Tiger tweets, with the control of the media and propaganda, the agenda of divide and conquer is easily accomplished. It renders the masses bickering between themselves, and when that is the case, the masses pose no risk to the ruling elite. That's a very interesting comment. It's part of another conversation there, but it makes sense to me. Faisal tweets, any future UK government can explain why things are so bad in this country. They can just blame the shite Brexit deal, says Faisal there. Hi to Maria Staderholm. How you doing, Maria? Thanks for following and connecting on Twitter. Hi to Liz Jones as well. Loads of tweets coming in on this. We're going to move away from Brexit now and matters of the European Union. You'll be glad to hear. Although I do think it's getting a little bit more interesting. More interesting. William tweets, loving the show tonight. Thanks, William. I never read those tweets out because it's very vain. But thanks for saying that. I'm sure Richie has a touch of Lieutenant Columbo in him. Lieutenant Columbo. Peter Falk, yeah. Just one more question. Got plenty of questions. I think we all have plenty of questions for the likes of Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn. Patrick tweets, Eddie Dempsey, the trade unionist, is spot on about the Brexit cabal-inspired conspiracy. My view of trade unions is gradually shifting towards positive, maybe one of our last bastions of support for the people. I could do a whole show on how legislation has gone through Parliament in the last decade and a half that has effectively rendered unions as impotent as a Nevada state boxing commissioner, in the immortal words of C. Montgomery Burns. They've consecutive governments, including the Blairite mass murdering government, pushed through legislation year in, year out that have rendered unions effectively impotent. Yeah. I'm sorry to say that, Patrick, but that's the way it is. And a great friend of mine in Manchester, my pal Mike, is a trade unionist, a real socialist, and a campaigner for workers' rights, and he would agree with that. In fact, he said it to me before. Now, we've got to move on because Michael Rivero looms large. He'll be with me just after the top of the hour. Bit of gender madness in the news. I did tweet an article last night from Martin Evans in the Telegraph about Caroline Farrow, a Catholic commentator, and her argument with a transgender rights campaigner, Susie Green. So a Catholic writer and a transgender rights campaigner, Susie Green, were on television and they had a disagreement about Girl Guides policy. This was a few weeks ago or a couple of months ago. But when the television debate ended, they began debating each other on Twitter. And that led to a six-month-long police investigation. So Caroline Farrow is a mother of five, strong religious views, allegedly used the wrong pronoun when referring to Ms. Green's transgender daughter. Ms. Green was so annoyed by that she lodged a formal complaint with Surrey Police. On Monday night, the police contacted Caroline Farrow and asked her to attend a voluntary police interview. And Martin Evans, writing in the Telegraph, writes, the response by a police force which, like all others, is struggling to cope with violent crime and knife violence will raise eyebrows and further fuel the debate around police. There's been a development. Today, the complaint was withdrawn by Ms. Green, the mother of the transgender daughter. Let me read you from the Daily Mail today. A mother who went to the police over tweets posted by a Catholic journalist about her transgender daughter says she has withdrawn the complaint. Susie Green, whose daughter Jackie transitioned as a teenager, reported Caroline Farrow to Surrey Police over tweets posted online after a TV appearance last year. Mrs. Farrow expressed her outrage yesterday that she was the subject of a criminal investigation for misgendering Jackie as a he online. The case has sparked a row over whether police should be spending time examining tweets rather than putting resources into tackling violence and theft. Now, Ms. Green, Jackie's mother, hit back today, said she has withdrawn the complaint to the police because she feels she's giving the Catholic mother a platform. Now, I believe we live in a police state, and if it was me, if the police were to send me a communication inviting me for an interview, I would sue the police force. I would. I'll tell you why. Because on this day of our Lord, the 20th of March 2019, there are no laws on the statute books about thought crime. Yet. They're not there yet. Give it time, of course, but they're not there yet. Now is the time to sue for harassment, for damages, and all the rest of it. You want now? I called somebody a he, and they had a meltdown, and they phoned you, the old Bill, and now you want me to come for an interview? You can fuck right off, is what you can do, and I'll be getting in touch with my solicitor, is what I would say. Now, there's a trans woman called India Willoughby, a man who transitioned, who often appears to debate these things. India Willoughby, I don't know what India Willoughby's original name was, but began life as a man, transitioned to a woman, often appears to debate these things on television. She was on GMTV this morning with conservative journalist Toby Young. India Willoughby was asked by Piers Morgan, is misgendering a hate crime? Here is the transgender woman's response. Is it a hate crime?
Well, gender is a protected characteristic just as much as race, religion or sexuality. And if somebody took a swipe at any of those, there would be a similar reaction. And to a transgender person, their identity is what they fought for. Every day you go out in the world and you have to justify yourself in some way. And I'll give you this example. Yes, it does seem innocuous. I've been listening this morning about, you know, accidentally calling somebody he or she, right, which to most people, it's irrelevant. You just brush it off. But if I give you this quick analogy, if I left a banana, say, on your doorstep, Piers, you'd wake up in the morning, you'd think it was a little bit weird, but you would think nothing more of it.
Piers would take the banana, run back upstairs, lock his bedroom door and stick it in his...
But if it was a black family and they woke up and they opened the door and found a banana on their doorstep, it has a different meaning.
Does it? Of course it does. If you're a black man and you come downstairs and somebody's left a banana on your doorstep, you'd probably think there's a right dickhead living in this neighbourhood. Proper coward to do something like that. If he's got an issue with me, come and see me. I'd like to think most black people would be disappointed by that, annoyed by it, and would move on. So it's a hate crime, says Willoughby. It's a hate crime. What a load of bollocks. But the government has afforded trans women and trans men the same protected status as ethnic minorities, as we know, crazy shit. So what about Toby Young? He was on the sofa next to the trans person. Conservative, I think Christian man, I know he's a conservative commentator, writes in The Telegraph and elsewhere. What did Toby Young say to the notion that misgendering someone is a hate crime?
One of the difficulties with making misgendering a hate crime is sometimes it can be a complete accident. Mm-hmm. The Office for the Schools Commissioner last year sent a form to schools which included 24 different types of gender. Are you going to prosecute people for not being able to remember all 24 types? Some people are gender fluid. Their genders
change. Well, what do
we
do about Sam Smith? Right, so Sam Smith came out yesterday.
Sam Smith even is a singer that's been very successful in the last couple of years. Sam Smith the other day said, oh, by the way, I'm non-binary now. Right. I'm non-binary, says Sam Smith.
Today, the singer, and he said that he now believes he's male and female. Born to...
Because he's a fucking moron.
Born to a biological male body, but now believes he self-identifies as male and female. Now, this raises all sorts of complexities, India, not least of which he's accepted a numerous number of awards for male-only categories. Yes. Does he continue to accept them? Should he hand the other ones back? Should he now enter female categories? Does it depend what mood he's in? People find it very confusing, this. And if you call Sam Smith he today, and he's identifying today as a female, is it a hate crime? But if tomorrow he identifies as male because he's gender fluid, does it cease to be a hate crime? Or, you know, I mean, where do you go with this?
Gender fluid, I get really confused on it as well. But I think it's really simple at the end of the day. If somebody identifies as whatever, it's a matter for them. And we're talking...
Exactly, India, Willoughby, trans, person, whatever it is you are. It's a matter for them. Keep it to yourself. And if somebody says, well, boy, as we say in Ireland, well, boy, and on that given day you think you're a girl, suck it up. It's for you... And you alone, the rest of us don't give a shit. We don't want to be listening to it. It's going to drive us to violence. You need to stop now, right? Listen to what this trans person says.
And we're talking about one letter here, an S. Either it's a she or a he. Oh. Is it such a big deal if somebody asks on a particular day to be addressed in that way
that you give them? I think a lot of people accept that.
Yeah.
What? A lot of people accept that, says Suzanne Reid, is it? The presenter. A lot of people accept it. Some arsehole you work with tells you on any given day, I'm a man. Tomorrow I'll be a woman. He today, she tomorrow. Call me she today and I'll fucking report you. Is that the way it's going to be? It's madness.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Absolutely. Howard Beale, gender fluidity as a concept, as a notion, is nonsense. It is nonsense. It is offensive. Very subjective thing. Yes, I can't be a hypocrite. It offends... Common sense, it offends general knowledge. Not me, I couldn't care less. The notion that you are gender fluid. Toby Young, the journalist, sums it up here. Have a listen to Toby Young. This is very interesting.
I think the difference is this, Piers, that when you use the N-word, when you call a gay person by the F-word, when you call a woman the B-word, there's no disputing that that is evidence of prejudice, of bigotry. Mm. But it could be that deliberately, but nonetheless, for perfectly respectable and legitimate political, philosophical or theological reasons, your point of view is that someone who is born a woman can't then become a man and vice versa. Mm.
Brilliantly succinct, brilliantly put by Toby Young there. Your beliefs are that you can't have surgery on your genitalia and then become a member of the opposite sex. And there are a lot of people who believe that and will never accept, for whatever reason, will never, you know, it could be religious reasons, as he said, it could be ethical reasons, will not accept that you are now a man all of a sudden or that now you are a woman. What are you going to do with that? But did you hear at the end of that what the trans person said? You have to listen very carefully, very important. At the very end of that clip, Toby Young was being interrupted. Listen to what India Willoughby says, because it's very, very revealing. Listen. So your right to state that which you believe fundamentally overrides the hurt that I might feel. You're absolutely fucking right, it does. And you can't legislate for that. this trans person is daft and is a dangerous lunatic. You can't prevent somebody from articulating an opinion just because you might be hurt by it. And the law cannot interfere here. And it certainly should not be sending police officers around to people to tell them, you misgendered somebody. Well, in fact, I didn't. That person over there lopped off his testicles. Because he's a... lopped off his testicles. Now he calls himself a woman. That's fine. It's none of my business. But I don't believe he is a woman. You can't tell me I have to believe it. And you can't tell me that I have to say it. And if he or she, as she wants to be called now, which is fine, is hurt by that, well, pucker up, buttercup. Get on with it. There's a lot worse in life than somebody saying, I don't believe you're really a woman. You know? 11 minutes. It's not. It's 9 minutes to the top of the hour. Very serious. I know we come back to this once every week or once every 2 weeks, but it's serious because it's like if you get that image of a snowball rolling down a hill, gathering pace. This is rushing onwards, rushing to a very dark place for free speech and freedom of thought. And outside of a tiny percentage of the independent media, nobody else wants to touch it for fear of being labelled as bigoted or transphobic, which is a nonsense term, which should be struck from the Oxford Concise Dictionary and every other dictionary. It's nonsense. Nobody's scared of these people. They're laughable, most of them. And by them, I mean the militant ones. There are thousands of trans folks going about their business on a daily basis. They're the finest people you could meet. They couldn't care less about any of this. The militant ones are dangerous, I think. Anyway, let's move on. Wednesday show. Michael Rivero will be with me in a few minutes' time, live from Oahu, where it's approaching 8 a.m. in the morning there. I don't think anybody has ever been more aware of the cameras, the attention and the publicity than the New Zealand Premier Jacinda Ardern. Very unusual woman, a bit of a grandstander, you could say. You know, we mention virtue signalling all the time. She might be a graduate of the University of Virtue Signalling. She might have a PhD. She's called for a global fight to root out racist right-wing ideology. She wants a global fight to root out racist right-wing ideology after last week's attack on two mosques in Christchurch, which killed 50 people, as you know, and injured many more. She's given an interview to the BBC and she said, a rise in immigration has got nothing to do with anything, she said. And the rise in immigration is not fueling racism, she said. So according to Jacinda Ardern, people just became intolerant of ethnic minorities and immigrants just for no reason. They just got up one morning, everything was fine. Have your ready brick or your porridge or your cornflakes. And as you walk out the door, the light bulb goes off over your head and you decide to blame immigrants for everything. According to Jacinda Ardern. Do you want to hear some of what she had to say? She wants a global fight against racism. Jacinda Ardern. BBC Today, she gave them an exclusive interview.
I would make that a global call. You know, what New Zealand experienced here was violence brought against us by someone who grew up and learnt their ideology somewhere else. So actually, if we want to make sure that globally we are a safe and tolerant and inclusive world, we cannot think about this in terms of boundaries. And that's the kind of leadership I think we need to see on this issue. We are a welcoming country. We have seen elements of our system where there have been exploitation against migrants who have come here, and including in our education system. And yes, we have sought to weed that out, but I utterly reject the idea that in any way, in trying to ensure that we have a system that looks after those who choose to call New Zealand home, that we have perpetuated an environment where this kind of ideology can exist. I utterly reject it. I want everyone who calls New Zealand home, who has made New Zealand their home, whatever their ethnicity or faith, to feel safe. I feel that particularly acutely when it comes to women and children. You know, when I visited the mosque in Wellington, a child yelled out to me as I was walking away.
Wait till you hear this garbage. she visited one of the mosques and a child called out to her. A child called out to her as she was walking away.
Walking away. Prime Minister, are we safe now?
Must have been a clever child to know she was the Prime Minister.
That is my job, is to ensure the safety of those from all walks of life who call New Zealand home, and it is their home. And that is now my role in the coming days, months, weeks, years, however I'm in the privilege of this office, is to ensure that they feel safe and secure and they know this is their home.
Yeah, yesterday she said she'd never utter Brenton Tarrant's name again. Ridiculous, of course. Today she wants to lead a global fight against terror on the right. Sit down, love. Love, sit down. You're the Prime Minister of New Zealand. You couldn't fucking beat Liechtenstein. Sit down. Do you know, I came across some information overnight and I verified it because there's so much crap in the Truth or Industrial Complex, in the so-called independent media. Crap. There really is. But I saw a bit of information. I had to double check it and treble check it. Turns out to be true. The armed police who responded first on Friday in New Zealand were conducting a drill just down the road. I had to look at it twice, thrice, four times to find out that was true. Now, people who have been listening to this programme for a long time will know that it's often the case, not always the case, but often the case, that when something very bad happens and people are killed, we learn that a drill, sometimes very similar to what happened, or a drill, I should say, preparing for an eventuality, which turns out to be very similar to the actual attack, is taking place. And Sibel Edmonds at newsbud.com, by the way, check out Newsbud. Sibel's putting videos up on a daily basis with breaking news about the movement of Brenton Tarrant, but much more besides on this. It's quite staggering to me, the coincidence theories that you're asked to swallow. Just swallow them and don't ask any questions. Again, there was a drill going on. I'm not saying for a minute that Tarrant didn't go in there and shoot people dead. I'm pretty sure he did. But now I'm beginning to think that Tarrant had a lot of help. I have to believe that. Can't prove it. And some might say, Fox News, some might say, that it's irresponsible of me to say that. It isn't irresponsible because my caveat is I haven't a Scooby-Doo. I don't know and I have no proof. But there was a drill going on down the road. I mean, how many more times, you know? And before we leave the news roundup, dear listener, this was in the Guardian newspaper overnight. It's very serious. UK to start issuing far-right terrorism alerts. Now, as you know, there is a colour-coded terror chart, a warning system in the UK. This came in after September the 11th. Not in England. The first colour-coded terror warning chart originated in the United States because it's a case of monkey see, monkey do, or Simon Says. The UK adopted it and we've got a ridiculous, ludicrous, laughable terror alert system, which is like the weather, where people can go onto the Home Office website just to check what's the terror forecast for today. Caroline Moore heading down to Tatton Park for a walk with the Jazz. We might pop in to that lovely shop that does lovely homemade pies and that and all. Hang on, check the fucking terror chart first. It's at Orange. Cancel the trip, download something to watch on telly. We're not going anywhere. So that's how mad the world has gone. Right now, the UK is going to bring in a special threat level warning system exclusively for far-right terror threats. You see, do you know what we really need to do? I'm just going to leave it here. And this is where I might get into trouble. We need to arm ourselves with pitchforks. We need to put those lovely pointy hats on that they used to wear in where was it? In Massachusetts, way back when. We need to wear those buckled shoes. We need to get torches and pitchforks. And a million of us need to go to Westminster and not harm a hair on anybody's heads. Not hurt anybody, but drive them all from that fucking building. And then when we're done, without harming anybody, after we're done with them, round the corner to Buckingham Palace and do the same. These people are psychopaths. They are psychotic in the extreme. And they have us dancing on the end of their strings. What's it like? It's orange today. The chances of an attack are highly likely. Right, well, there you are. So they're going to bring in official threat level warnings for far-right terrorism. It's all exaggerated, of course. While there are people who have succumbed in some way to a Wahhabi-type philosophy of radical Islam, while they exist, they're a tiny minority. While there are knuckle-draggers who hate people because of the colour of their skin and who are violent, they are a tiny minority. They are not a prevailing threat. They are not an overriding threat. It is a total and utter fiction. That's all it ever was and all it ever will be. We're being played off against one another. Left against right, black against white, Asian against, I don't know, Hispanic. Gender. Gays against straights. And the real enemy. Laughing its arse off. Laughing its arse off. Back in a couple of minutes. This is the Kinks on the Richie Allen Show. Music from the Kinks, 3.5 minutes past the hour. It's just after 6 p.m. The Richie Allen Show live on Fab Radio 2. Triggerwarning.tv, tune in radio. And where else are we? We're in lots of places. Thanks for all the tweets. Lots of tweets on the terror threat level chart. Did I tweet out the chart? It's an MI5, it's the MI5 website, not the Home Office. I'm just tweeting it out right now, by the way, if you want to see it. The terror threat level is at severe at the moment. It's severe. So you don't want to do anything. You don't want to be doing anything serious or anything heavy because it's severe. Severe meaning that, basically, a terror attack is highly likely. That's how they want people to live, you see. It's no joke. They want you to live like that. For the rest of your lives, living by a terror threat level chart. I know. Let's take the headlines. Michael Rivera will be joining me in a couple of minutes' time. We won't. We'll get him on straight away. We'll get Mike on straight away. Listen, I don't have to tell you anything about this man. Terrific journalist and analyst with a brilliant radio show, the What Really Happened radio show. All you need to know about him, if you haven't heard him before, in the unlikely event, can be found at his website, whatreallyhappened.com. So much to talk about. Bright and early in Oahu, in Hawaii. Let's welcome to the programme Michael Rivera. Michael, welcome.
Thank you for having me. How are you doing?
I'm very good. We would have spoken last month, but I was laid up with pneumonia. And that kind of broke our unbroken sequence of about 4 years, Mike, of every month.
That can be bad stuff. I'm glad you're doing better because, you know, that's serious, serious stuff.
Nasty, Mike, but I'm better, mate, and it's great to be with you. Do I understand it to be true that while a man was running around mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand last Friday and shooting people dead, that there was genuinely, verifiably, down the road, there was a drill of sorts going on, which explains why the very first wave of anti-terror police arrived on the scene very quickly. I've been led to believe, Michael, by credible sources, that there was a drill going on. What's your info?
Well, there's absolutely no question about it. You know, in fact, the New Zealand government is saying that's why they were able to be on the scene so quickly, is that this tactical unit with the full Kevlar and the weapons and everything, they were already dressed up and ready to go just down the road. And they got there about 4 minutes after the regular police responded to the first calls.
Right. You've been covering terrorist attacks for years. How often does that happen, Michael? A drill, which is kind of imagining a very similar scenario to the one that's actually unfolding. How often does that happen? Or how often have you noticed that to happen in your experience?
It's been an unnerving constant, you know, going all the way back to 9/11 when FEMA was already in New York City the night before it happened. We had anti-terror drills in London during the tube bombing that were simulating a tube bombing. And it seems to be a feature of these events, which ultimately people begin to think are staged, which is what more and more people are thinking about what happened in Christchurch, that it was in fact staged to push the gun grabber agenda, along with justifying imposing more censorship over the social media and the independent media.
You always look for the response in not in terms of the police response, but the response in terms of what the establishment proposes as a result of it. And we see the same thing again, creeping, well, I suppose it's not creeping anymore, it's more like a stampede, a stampede of censorship and trying to shut people down. I guess you thought it was quite bizarre to hear the New Zealand Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, saying that we shouldn't even speak this guy's name. Bizarre, Michael.
It is very bizarre, but I think what's most alarming is how New Zealand is now threatening to jail anybody who kept a copy of that 16-minute streamed video from the shooter. And they've already arrested a bunch of people just for having copies or for sharing copies. And of course, everybody's response is, what is on that video that they don't want people to see? And, you know, people are looking at that video. There's already a lot of very questionable information being poured onto the internet, trying to keep up the confusion. But I think at this point, the general feeling is that this was another put up job to push the gun grabber agenda. And again, to justify more censorship on the internet. Both New Zealand and Australia are blocking all kinds of independent media websites right now merely for having that video on their pages.
And there's a young boy, Michael. When I say young, I think he might be 18. I understand he's facing prison time for sharing a link to the shooting. I mean, that's...
Yeah, 10 years. 10 years.
If convicted, possibly 10 years for sharing the video. So they're terrified of people seeing the video.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the feeling that people have is, you know, there's something they don't want people to see on the video. They don't want people looking at it. And that may be a result of the fact that every time there's one of these staged events, whether it's 9/11 or Sandy Hook, the information gets on out and people on the net look at it and say, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. This doesn't look real. This or that looks fake. And it may be the case that they don't want to even take a chance with that happening this time.
I believe the kid was involved just based on what I've seen. I have seen bits and pieces. There's no doubt that there's been a catastrophic loss. When I say there's no doubt, I need to be maybe a bit more humble. I have no doubt in my mind there's been catastrophic loss of life. Sibel Edmonds, who's in Turkey and has been for 6 months, has done some terrific work tracing this guy's steps during two visits to Turkey in 2016. He went to Pakistan, he went to North Korea. Michael, you and I are real journalists. It's anathema to us to make stuff up, and I don't want to do that, but you've got to ask questions. What was going on these travels? And could there be an opportunity for pretty dark-minded or sinister people to get a hold of this kid and work on him and get him to a place where he might be involved in something like we saw on Friday?
There's absolutely no question. I mean, among his travels, he went to Israel for a while, and we know there's been a lot of Mossad activity around New Zealand involving things like stolen passports. But in looking at the video, one thing is very obvious, and that is that this guy had absolutely no compunction when he pulled that trigger. And that indicates that either he had past serious military experience in which he was perfectly okay with shooting people, or he was on some serious medication at the time, possibly prescription antidepressants.
Here's a question for you. Loads of interest in this on Twitter, of course. My listeners know all about you. Michael has been making programs like this, not since before I was born, he's not that old, but for a long time. Michael Rivera, whatreallyhappened.com. Listeners are wondering, Michael, about the event and about what happened. They're also asking questions about the independent media. I have a feeling that a lot of things that emerge in the independent media are misdirection statements made by dark actors. Like, all of a sudden, you get a lot of people saying, oh, it was a hoax and nobody died and all those family, all those families are liars. And that's very harsh. I mean, if you feel that way, you're entitled to express it, you're entitled to think it. But I wonder how much of that stuff is manufactured by people who want to throw listeners and viewers away from the likes of Sibel Edmonds, who's on the ground in Turkey. I know it's not New Zealand, but she knows a lot about what's gone on in Turkey.
Yes.
Your good self, Michael. So how much of this stuff, it's all a hoax, it never happened, is being perpetrated by the establishment?
Well, again, as I said before, there's a lot of just absolute junk information about Christchurch being thrown onto the net to try and keep up the confusion, to muddy the waters, to delay the formations of a popular consensus. In some cases, you know, there are legitimate reasons to think, for example, that Sandy Hook was a complete hoax and didn't involve real dead people. But in the case of Christchurch, yeah, real people died. I guess they didn't want to take the chance of trying to fake it again. But looking at just this iron-fisted way that New Zealand is coming down on this video, there must be something in there that they don't want people looking at. Now, I haven't seen the whole video yet. I've only looked at part of it. And you know, we're already seeing people saying, oh, you know, it's visual effects, it's edited. The brass from the gun was just vanishing in midair. And it's all kinds of nonsense to try and keep things confused, keep us arguing over minutia. But so far to me, it looks like it's the real deal, that this guy really went in and shot up a bunch of people. The question is, who put him up to it? Where did he get the guns? We know that he had a Category A New Zealand gun license, but so far, investigators, they found where he purchased four of the smaller weapons, but they don't know where he got that military-style weapon that he actually used in the shooting. And maybe that's part of what they don't want people looking at on the video, is they can't explain where he got that particular gun.
Good stuff, Michael. Final comment on that specific aspect of it for now. There were some people arrested in the vicinity, civilians. One of them had a gun. Those people were released. This is all factual. This isn't conjecture. I have to ask the question, could one of those people, maybe the person with the gun, could there have been assistance? Could this guy have had people working with him or people there to ensure that he went and did the job that he was given to do? Again, I'm reluctant to ask those questions because you don't want to get labelled like the truth or industrial complex, like the liars who make stuff up. But you've got to ask, what was somebody doing in the vicinity of that shooting with a gun, a civilian, arrested and then released? We need to know more about that, Michael.
Well, you're absolutely right. There were a total of four people arrested, three men and one woman. And more importantly, it was reported that improvised explosive devices, plural, were found wired to the vehicles, again, plural, used by the attackers, again, the plural, as reported by the Associated Press. And then all of a sudden, the story changes again, and it's down to this one crazed lone nut assassin. And of course, we've heard that phrase before. And this is very similar to other incidents like the Boston bombing, where there was this very obvious uniformed group that planted the backpack that exploded, on which the Sarnievs were blamed. We had in Columbine, there were the two students who were found conveniently dead, but there were three other people who were arrested and then mysteriously just simply disappeared. So, yeah, there probably were other people in the area that were there to support this shooter doing what he did. And maybe he just decided to live stream this video and didn't tell anybody, and that's why there's this panic over it.
Yeah, great stuff, Michael. Michael Rivera was our guest. It's not great, of course. It's not great that 50 people are dead and many more are injured, and the mainstream media refuses to do its job. It's just basically rewritten the alleged manifesto of the shooter and has been broadcasting that as fact without investigating it. It's disgusting, is what it is, what has happened to journalism. Michael, you'll be aware of this. In this country, the country of where I live and where I broadcast from, the UK government is going to start issuing official threat level warnings exclusively for far-right terrorism because of rising concerns about white supremacist murder attempts. This is true now. I know you probably have come across this already. You're all over these stories. The Joint Terrorism Analysis Centre will issue these reports. Michael, What planet are we living on? I've never come across anything like this before in my life. Exclusive threat level warnings for far-right terrorism. What's going on, Mike?
Well, again, everybody's pushing this shooting for their own particular agenda. And one of the agendas that is being pushed is white supremacism. But what's really interesting, you know, the media is trying to describe this shooter as a Trump supporter, white supremacist. But if you actually read his manifesto, he's kind of on both sides of the line. He's very much into the environment. He mentions Trump in his manifesto, but not in positive terms. But everybody's trying to link this guy to say that, you know, white people in general are bad. And certainly here in the United States of America, that's been something we've been seeing growing in the corporate media propaganda for a long time. You know, that it's okay for black people to be proud of their heritage. That's black power. It's okay for Hispanics to be proud of their heritage. That's brown power. But if white people are proud of their heritage, that's racism and supremacy, and it has to be knocked down.
Yeah, there's an attempt almost to equate nationalism with thuggery and hatred and bigoted behavior, when you and I know there's a great distinction between people whom are proud of their country, who want, first of all, who want their country to be sovereign and independent of, say, the European Union for jobs and for public services and everything, and the knuckle-dragging thug who hates people. That guy does exist, but he is a tiny minority. But it seems like they want to equate nationalism with hatred. And that, of course, is not new in the United States, because even before the Trump election, there has been a manipulation attempt there to do the same thing. Is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And this gets back to the agenda of the globalists. And right now, they're very much afraid. Brexit is about to happen in another a week from Friday. And they're seeing their dreams of a one world government start to crumble because of the rise of nationalism and populism around the world. And so they're out to demonize nationalism. They're trying to link it back to the Nazi movement. They're trying to say that anybody who's a nationalist and proud of their country is automatically being racist. There's definitely a full court media press going on to demonize anybody who wants to say my country comes first and the other countries are just going to have to take care of themselves.
Wow, Michael, it's incredible. And you're watching the death of Brexit as well from your vantage point in Oahu, in Hawaii there. Michael Rivero is our guest. Michael is beavering away, getting ready to produce his excellent three-hour program later this morning. The What Really Happened show, of course, which is streamed on multiple stations right across America, but also, of course, on his own website as well. You can check it out there. What we've seen today, Michael, has kind of been the final nail in the coffin. The Prime Minister has asked for an extension for 3 months. The European Union has said, well, you can have one only if you get your deal through Parliament. They know she won't be able to do that. They will then come along and say, well, what you really need now is you need a much longer extension. How are you reading this? I suppose we spoke about this back in 2016. Neither of us ever expected that the UK would ever be allowed to leave, right?
Well, I know the Remainers are still fighting tooth and nail against it, but there's a little bit of a fly in the ointment, so to speak, because to have an extension for Brexit requires the unanimous consent of the rest of the member nations of the European Union. And Italy has already said they will not go along with it. So that right there is the end of EU support for a delay.
They have, Mike. And according even to Le Point magazine in Paris, they've indicated today that Macron will also veto the extension. However, Donald Tusk, after the Italians and the French spoke, seemed to think that if May got the deal through Parliament, they would give them the extension. But I hear what you're saying. It's checkmate either way. It doesn't matter one way or the other. The UK is just not going anywhere. What would you expect, Michael, from the outside looking in? It's very interesting to get your perspective, not living through it here. What sort of a reaction would you envisage that there would be from the people of this country, remembering that 17,410,000 people, 52% of those who voted to leave? Do you think they'll take it lying down, Michael? They'll yawn, they'll say, ah, well, this is what happens, or do you think there'll be a reaction?
I think there's going to be a reaction. In fact, I actually hope there'll be a reaction because I think the time has come for ordinary people around the world to stop letting these globalists and these empire builders just shove them around. And we're starting to see that with the Yellow Vest movement, which began in France and has now spread to other countries. We may see Yellow Vests all over Great Britain if, in fact, the Brexit does not happen on the 29th.
There was a funny incident at Westminster yesterday where Yellow Vest protesters managed to get access to the offices of civil servants in Westminster, threw up all manner of questions about security. Can I ask you this, Michael? We've witnessed over the years social or grass, I won't say social movements, but grassroots movements like Yellow Vests and others. They generally fizzle out and usually there are recriminations amongst those who participated saying that they were infiltrated. There are people who think that the Yellow Vest movement has all the hallmarks of something that was maybe engineered by the Open Democracy Foundation stuff. What do you think, Mike, or is that just fanciful?
I think that's just fanciful, and I think it's part of the effort to discredit the Yellow Vests by saying, oh, they're part of some secret plot. I do know that the Yellow Vests are being infiltrated by agent provocateurs who are committing acts of violence to allow the French government to justify shutting them down. So there's a lot of dirty fighting going on here, but it's clear that France is afraid of the Yellow Vests. George Soros is afraid of the Yellow Vests. The globalists in general are afraid of the Yellow Vests and the growing populism and nationalism that seems to be sweeping across the world.
The one thing that worries me about these movements, I'll accept your answer there, that it is genuine, and I hope you're absolutely right there. But often when you get a lot of young people, this is going to sound very condescending, but I can't say it any other way. It's not an intelligence issue. It's a general knowledge issue. A lot of young people, well-meaning, but they're not educated, Michael. I saw young people on Sky News today. They seem to be pretty decent. They didn't seem to be progressive types. They seem to be robust and tough. They're arguing in favour of staying in the European Union. But sadly, Michael, they obviously don't have any idea what the European Union is. And I look at the Yellow Vest movement and others, and I see a lot of well-meaning people railing against genuine tyranny, but they actually don't have the basics in terms of the basic information. Do you know where I'm coming from?
Well, yeah, basically the younger people, they're too young to remember what their countries were like before the EU. The older people, of course, they have a memory of what their countries were like before the European Union, and they got to watch the transition to what their countries are today. And they're beginning to realize they basically got swindled because they were told the EU was only about open borders and open trade. And now, of course, they're finding out the plan all along was to create a federalized European super state in which the sovereignty of the member nations was going to be taken away. The younger people never watched that transition. So they're more susceptible to the propaganda that the EU is wonderful and the EU is great. And, you know, all those people who want sovereignty, well, they're just a bunch of old fuddy-duddies and you shouldn't pay attention to them.
Mike, we'll leave it there for today. We normally do another 10 minutes or thereabouts. We're only getting back to normal. There has been a clock change as well, which has kind of messed us up a bit. We'll be, with your permission, of course, we'll be back in April next month for our regular cross pond chat about these issues. But it's across two ponds, really, Mike, isn't it? If you look at it that way, it's across two ponds. The What Really Happened radio show by presented and produced by Michael Rivero is a must listen, folks. If you haven't before, check it out, whatreallyhappened.com. Absolutely on the ball analysis of the biggest geopolitical events of the day. Mike, I love you for coming on every month, mate. Thanks for doing it today. Have a brilliant rest of your day there in Oahu, and we'll pick it up again in April. We'll do a longer stint. Thanks so much, my friend.
Well, thank you, and we'll talk to you next month.
Can't wait, Mike. Cheers. Michael Rivero, folks, top man, joining us there live from Oahu in Hawaii, whatreallyhappened.com. Great guy is Michael. Now, that's it for the program. I'm going to wrap it up there. 90-minute show today. I've got some domestic things to be doing today, but that's all right. I've got two amazing guests for you tomorrow. BBC producer Anna Breeze will join the programme in the first hour. You don't want to miss Anna. Can't wait to speak with her tomorrow. Anna Breeze will be on the programme. And the author, Dr. Michael Masters, will be on the show in the second hour. He's an academic as well at a university in the Midwest in the US. And he's talking about why he's come to believe that extraterrestrials or UFOs are future versions of ourselves. What a show we've got for you tomorrow. Thanks for listening today, and a massive shout out to Michael Rivero for coming on. Look after yourselves and one another. I'm going to leave you with the bravery. You have been listening to The Richie Allen Show. My name is Richie Allen. This programme will be repeating very soon on richieallen.co.uk, but it will be on YouTube as well, iTunes, Spotify and podomatic.com. Think we've covered a lot today. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow, Thursday at 5 p.m. Until then, it's bye from me. This is The Bravery.